back to the Financial 15, the podcast where we answer your financial questions in approximately 15 minutes. My name is Ashley, and with me as always is our wealth advisor, Stephen Biddle. Say hi, Stephen.
Good morning, afternoon, or evening, everyone.
Yes, wherever you're listening from, any time zone. Now, in our last episode, we shared a strategy of withdrawing from your RSPs early before turning that RSP into a RIF in order to lessen the tax burden on your estate. Now, this is a good segue into the world of tax planning that we incorporate into your financial plan to be sure that we're being as efficient as possible with your wealth. Of course, everyone knows that the tax man not only comes every year at income tax time, but also after we die. And the best way to ensure that your living wealth and your estate wealth won't be nickeled and dimed into oblivion is by speaking with your wealth advisor and their tax professionals to ensure you're taking advantage of every avenue of tax efficiency. There are a few strategies that we will be sharing, and today we'll start with the simple act of income splitting. For many couples in Canada, one partner typically out-earns the other by a fair margin. Maybe it's because one partner stays home with the kids when they're young and either have very limited hour jobs or no job at all. Or perhaps one partner's passion is in a field that's just simply underpaid, like some teaching positions or perhaps even a retail position. Maybe one partner is still going to school and hasn't entered the workforce yet. So whatever the reason, having one partner vastly out-earn the other does have its advantages come tax time. Stephen's going to share some more insight into this topic, and if we have time, we'll touch on another more well-known strategy. So Stephen, take her away.
So basically what we want to look at today is income splitting. And it says exactly as the word means, splitting the income. And if you can split the income, then what happens is you can split your tax brackets. Because as many of you know, in Canada, we are in a marginal tax bracket, which basically implies the higher the tax bracket, the higher your level of taxes. So if you can have one large tax bracket and split it into two smaller tax brackets, you're actually going to win from that side of things. So as Ashley mentioned, the first strategy is the income splitting. And that's when you're going to lower your overall tax bill by shifting income from the highest income earner into someone in a lower tax bracket. So let's go through some of the pieces. Let's start with the first one, spousal RSPs. So one of the most common ways families can split income is through a spousal registered retirement savings plan. How does it work? Well, the higher income earner pays into the RSP and they receive the tax deduction. Now the account is in the lower earning partner's name. So when he or she withdraws those funds are taxed in the person's hands at the lower tax rate. So the higher income earner will still withdraw funds from their own RSP in retirement, but they won't have to pull out as much because the lower earner has money to remove as well. So that's a very good strategy. The one little asterisk that goes along with it is you have to basically have the money in the spousal RSP for 3 years or it's taxed back in the original contributor's hands. Why did that happen? Well, when they first came out with it, smart people put the money in year one and they took it out the next year. And all of a sudden they instantly made money and Revenue Canada said, whoa, 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 whoa. We can't be having you doing that every single year.
So that's too tax efficient.
Too tax efficient. So just keep in mind that we always say the 3 year rule. And what that means is if you contribute money into your spouse's RSP and your spouse pulls it out, if they do it within 3 years, it's going to be taxed back to you. So that's a great strategy as a spousal RSP. The next one is the TFSA, and people don't really think about this because the one thing with taxes, there's something called the attribution rules. And that means you can't just give money to somebody and then they pay lower taxes. There's usually consequences if you're trying to avoid taxes. But tax-free savings accounts, if you remember, they're tax exempt. So what do you do? So if you're maxing out your own tax-free savings account, you could give money to your partner or child if they're 18 or older and give them the funds to invest. And since the income earned within a TFSA is tax exempt and is not subject to any of the attribution rules, this is a simple and really effective income splitting option. Now, just be aware that it is the tax TFSA holder that makes the contribution subject to their room, right? So they have to have the room. Another one that is incredibly popular is pension splitting. So those who receive a pension from their workplace or a RIF withdrawal at 65 or over can transfer up to 50% of their eligible income to a spouse or common law partner, which will significantly reduce the family's tax bill when retirement comes. And this is where I was talking about the marginal tax rate. You know, in the province of Alberta, the first kind of tier goes from zero to $57,375 and taxed around 25% is that bracket. Then from 55 to 114,750 is at 30.5. So in my example, if one person had the pension, $100,000 pension, and the other person had no income, and then all of a sudden you can split it 50-50, you're saving at least 5% on your taxes, right? So that's a really easy way of doing it. Another way you can do things, which some people don't think about, is paying for expenses. And what I mean by that is the higher income partner covers most of the household expenses and then allows the lower income earner to save and invest, which will be taxed, of course, at a lower rate and reduce the overall family's tax burden. Now, if it's a big difference and the lower income earner is not really having any income whatsoever, you can do a loan. So in this example, the higher income earning spouse can lend money to the lower income earning spouse or family member to invest through a prescribed rate loan. Now, this can be helpful if all the registered accounts are maxed out, as the lower income earner can invest those funds in a non-registered account and pay the tax on the income generated from invested securities at their lower marginal tax rate. Now, you have to loan the money since a gift to your spouse would invoke those attribution rules. And the attribution rules, once again, is if the higher income person gave the money to the lower income person, the reason they're doing is to avoid taxes. So the government says, no, you can't do that. We want our money. So what you do with the loan is that the borrower must pay interest on the loan each year by January 30th. Although if the money is being used to invest in a non-registered account, the interest should be tax deductible for the borrower. So the minimum prescribed rate is set quarterly by the CRA, Canadian Revenue Agency, and that must be charged on the loan to avoid the attribution rules. Currently, that sits at around 4%, at least until June 30th of 2025. So like you said, 4% tax deductible. So you want to invest in things that pay, you know, interest, dividends, and take advantage of that.
Now, when it comes to the spousal RSPs, they have always confused me completely. So can we do kind of like an example? So we'll just use me and Ron for an example. So years and years and years ago, Ron was the big income earner in our family, and he earned about double what I made. So now let's say I open up a spousal RSP so that he can then contribute to my RSP on my behalf. Is that how it works?
Okay. No, so to answer that, let's think of it this way. Revenue Canada cares about two things, ownership and income, okay? So a spousal RSP in Ashley's name and your own RSP in Ashley's name are the same thing. They're owned by you. The money that goes in is yours. That's the thing with the spousal RSP is when the money's contributed, it's yours. So Ron contributed to your spousal RSP. And you contributed to your own RSP.
Okay.
So the ownership of it is both you. Now, where the spousal part comes in is who gets the tax deduction. So Ron contributed his X dollars that he's allowed for his contribution into your RSP. So he gets the tax deduction and you basically own the money. And when you pull that out many years down the road, you are getting taxed on that income.
Okay. That makes much more sense to me. I don't know why it always has confused me. I hate to be embarrassed, but I've worked in the bank for so long and a spousal RSP has always flown over my head. So thank you for explaining that a bit better for me.
And so that's why when clients deal with us, we can actually have one RSP that is both a spousal and a non-registered. And we open it up as a spousal, but the spouse can contribute to the same account because, like I said, Revenue Canada wants to know income and ownership, right?
Okay.
And the banks, they make you open two different things because they'll just screw it all up. They always get confused.
Yes. Yeah.
And now we know why.
Yeah. Because you get people like me working there. Anyways,
Yes.
moving along. All right, so that touches on the income splitting that we can do, you know, to make sure that we're taxing your wealth more efficiently. But there's also the age-old tactic of putting money away into simply tax-deferred or tax-exempt accounts. Now, it's more than just opening up an RSP, TFSA, FHSA, any of those kind of tax-exempt accounts. Plans should also be made when it comes to investment decisions in those accounts. So, Stephen, can you shed a little more light on that strategy as well?
Sure. Okay. So, as we know, as Ashley talked about, you have accounts that are tax deferred, which would be tax-free savings accounts, and your RSP, which then becomes your RIF, your LIF, LIRA, all those kind of things. So money inside of a registered plan or tax-deferred plan, it doesn't matter what it is. A dollar of interest equals a dollar of capital gains, which equals a dollar of dividends. So inside that account, it doesn't matter how the income grows or where it's from. When it comes out, it's all taxed as income, okay? But outside of an RSP, in a non-registered account, as an example, there is a very big difference between the tax rates on income, which is interest, and capital gains and dividends. Now, just an example, how huge that can be. In Alberta, for lower income individuals, so individuals who are in that $0 to $57,000 tax bracket, when you make a dollar in interest, you're taxed at 25%. Capital gains is 12.5%. You know what dividends are? They're 2.5%.
Oh, we always want dividends then is what you're saying.
Well, in the lower, but even when you ratchet up, or if you ratchet up into that, you know, that 55 to 115 bracket, it's 30%. 15% and 10%, right? Mm-hmm. So if you think about it, if you can literally, we'll use a nice example. Someone has $1 million and they have $500,000 in GICs, $500,000 in stocks. Mm-hmm. One person keeps all the money in GICs outside in the non-registered account. And the other keeps that person has 500 in the interest in the non-registered and 500 in dividends and capital gains. So when you look at that person's tax bill, they're paying that 30% tax on the interest.
Right.
Person two has exactly the same portfolio, exactly the same risk, except they have their $500,000 in stocks in the non-registered account, and the $500,000 in interest or GICs in the registered account. In that example, the dividends and capital gains are going to be taxed at 15% and 10%. So what will happen over time is you're giving away half or more of your growth to the government in taxes because you do not have your funds allocated in an efficient manner.
Okay.
And you can also do the same thing. You know, I'm literally doing this with a client. Over the years, you know, his RSP, their RSPs have grown. And we've always had, you know, kind of a growth mandate. But, you know, other things came along and, you know, he looked at the market and didn't want to be too aggressive and started putting money into GICs and stuff. And then we looked at it. We're like, you've got a boatload of GICs and you're non-registered and a boatload of, you know, stocks in your registered. So we're literally going to flip that entire thing around. His allocation will not change, but we're going to drop his tax bill. Right.
See,
and that's going to grow. And then that also can work with, you know, tax-free savings accounts as well. Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with some people are, well, I'm a little unsure. Well, why don't you just keep your safe money, you know, rainy day money inside a tax-free savings account. If you want to buy a GIC in there, you know, as long as you look at your overall allocation in your account, that's what matters. So you have your mix, then you look at the tax. And it's huge. Like you really think about that, right? If you have, you know, $500,000, we'll just use an example of someone in that, you know, $100,000 to $150,000 tax bracket. You know, $500,000 making you X dollars, you're at 36% tax. You're losing a third of your money on the GIC. where capital gains and dividends are literally 18% and 17%, so like half.
Mm-hmm.
So you get to make twice as much money with 0% risk.
Right. So now in that example, basically what we're saying, just so I can get this clear, is that putting, you know, investments that earn those higher taxed gains into tax exempt registered accounts is much more beneficial than having them in a non-registered.
Yes. And someone might say, okay, well, what happens if I already have, you know, in this example, what happens if I have $500,000 in an RSP and I've got $500,000 in GICs? Am I stuck? No, you can. You can swap, right? Yeah. And the nice thing is if you actually have it structured correctly, where you've got your $500,000 in your registered account, the beauty of that is when you sell it, there's no capital gains on any of that.
Right. Yeah.
Right. And your GICs, when they come due, well, that's just when they come due. So now all of a sudden you can literally swap that around, right? You've got, you sell your stock. So that's all in cash now. And that can go by your GICs. And then you've got that GIC money can go buy stocks. Now, you know, you have to look into transactions costs, right? Well, that's the one advantage in having the managed accounts through us. There are no transaction costs, right?
Right.
So yeah. you're not spending that, you know, whatever your broker's going to charge you in fees to do that. So it's a great strategy, and it's really missed by a ton of people, a ton, just because it just kind of gets away on people over time. Right.
Oh, absolutely. And I think because a big chunk of people, you know, they do their investing, they pick what they pick. And then I think a lot of people don't realize that there are strategies to different investments in different accounts, because it's not common knowledge.
Yes. And also too, just tweaking on that a tiny bit more is, if all things being equal, getting back to you and your Ron example. You know, if Ron's making a lot more money than you, it would be better if Ron owned the capital gains and the dividend producing investments, mm-hmm. and you owned the GICs. Because if you were in a lower tax bracket, right?
Yeah.
And so you could do that among couples as well, right? That's another strategy that can work. But, you know, for the individual level, it makes sense. Because like you say, when people first start saving, they usually start back in the day before there was a TFSA, they started saving with their RSPs first.
Right.
Right. You always put money into the RSP. Then TFSAs came along, they put money into TFSAs. So as that grows, they might look at it and say, wow, you know, I've got, you know, $800,000 in my RSPs and, you know, a good chunk of that's in stocks. So when I'm non-registered, I'm not sure what I want to do. So I'm just going to have that more conservative. Mm-hmm. And you just start adding to GICs and start adding to money market funds outside. Yeah. And it just sort of slips.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And it's like you say, it's not a one size fits all kind of situation. Everyone's situation is different. And I think it's, you know, it's clients taking the time, individuals taking the time of actually going in to say, okay, so we've done all of this. We've made these decisions. We've made these investment choices and put our plan into place. But now, you know, here is my situation with either just me or with my partner, family, whatever the case may be. So how are we now going to diversify and allocate everything so that I can, you know, be as efficient with my taxes as possible?
Yeah. And then also too, there are some times where that just doesn't work, right? Like if you literally needed to have $200,000 that you were going to buy a house in the next 3 months, well, you're not going to flip the whole portfolio and throw that into stocks, because who knows what happens in 3 months, right?
Exactly. So.
That's but right. it's a way of doing it, and it's something to look at. And when we look at portfolios and do plans, we look at the allocation. Where are things sitting? Does that make sense, right? And it's an easy thing to do.
Yeah.
Oh, it can have huge benefits.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's a really great point that, you know, kind of helps to shelter more of our wealth away from the tax man, which is really a goal that I think everyone strives for in the grand scheme of things. We work hard for our money. We don't like that we have to always just give it so freely to the government. So it's a nice thing to think about. And, you know, like we said, it's important to remember there's no one size fits all tax plan. And if you really want to journey down the path of tax efficiency, which, you know, spoiler alert, everyone should be doing no matter what, it's always best to speak with your wealth advisor, your tax professional, ideally both, if whether they're the same person or they're a team of people, you know, you should be speaking with those who are going to know the most about how to help you. So that's going to wrap up another episode of our Financial 15. We've gone a tiny bit over the limit, but that's okay because I feel like we delved in a little bit deeper, which is really nice. And we really appreciate everyone who tunes in to listen to our podcast. So if you have any questions from today's episode or even any previous episodes, we welcome you to contact us through email. You can contact me directly at ashley.nichols@nbpcd.com. And you can also find all of our contact information for myself, for Stephen, for our office at our website. And that's at www.biddlejohnstonwmteam.ca. So thanks to everyone for taking the time to tune in. And thank you, Stephen, for taking the time to speak with us today.
You're welcome.
And we hope all of our listeners have a lovely and financially literate day, and we will chat with you in the next episode. So say goodbye, Stephen.
Goodbye.